This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And it's Don Dubuque filling in for Newell Norman today on this Friday. Glad to have you with us. Newell will be back with you next week. Coming up in the next hour, we're going to be talking Mardi Gras. Everything you wanted to know about Mardi Gras, the new ordinances, parade routes, any changes, green throws, and more. Editor and publisher of the Mardi Gras Guide, Arthur Hardy, is coming in studio with us, and we'll be joined by telephone with the Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser and talk about the tourism angle to Mardi Gras. Hope you'll join us for that, and everybody's getting the old Mardi Gras fever about now. But this hour, we're talking, polls and politics, in particular, the popularity of President Donald Trump. The latest Gallup poll that I saw, and it may have changed by now, shows his job approval a personal best at 49%. 63% of Americans approve of the way he's handling the economy, which is up 6 points from the prior reading in November. It is the highest economic approval rating, not only for him, but for any president since George Bush had those very high approval ratings in the first few months after the 9/11 terrorist attacks. His ratings for handling foreign affairs, 47%, foreign trade, 50%. That's also the best to date. Military action in Iran, more Americans in the poll approve 53 than disapprove, which is at 45. During the poll, they also polled on foreign trade, where he signed the United States-Mexico-Canada trade deal to replace the North American Free Trade Agreement. The economy, Americans' confidence is higher than any point in the past 2 decades, and national satisfaction is the highest in 15 years. Pretty impressive, according to the poll, and we are told that 6 out of 10 Americans say they are better off today than they were 3 years ago. Do you fit that bill? 504-260-1870, or you can simply text us at 870-870. Join us to talk about, maybe dissect this poll and look into it a little deeper is Ron Fauché, political analyst and the publisher of Lunchtime Politics. Ron, good to have you with us. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you. Happy to be here.
Tell us about this Gallup poll. What is your reaction when you see these kind of numbers? Is this, as they say, just a snapshot in time, or is this some trend that we will look to continue on?
Well, it is a snapshot in time. Every individual poll is. One of the things we do with our Lunchtime Politics newsletter is we average the polls every day because we usually have anywhere from 4 to 5 to 6 polls that come out on a daily basis with the president's job approval. And we find that by averaging it over time, we have a better read of it. That Gallup poll, for example, sort of spiked up on that one day. That was still during the impeachment controversy when President Trump's job rating went up, and it went up in all of the polls, not just Gallup. But we've generally found that his job rating in over the last week has been sort of between 45% and 46%, which is still high for him, and it's roughly the same percentage, 46%. Of the popular vote that he received in the last election.
With regard to some of those other poll numbers I gave out, how does that match up with your polls?
Well, most of those numbers seem high compared to everything else, but they all show moving in the same direction. There's no question about it that a solid majority of voters approve of the way Trump is handling the economy, and that's really his big ace in the hole for re-election. You even have as many as 25% to 30% of Democrats who approve the way he's handling the economy, plus almost all Republicans and a good majority of independents. So that's really, really very important for the president, and that's what gives him strength and the ability to get re-elected.
And what does this say about the Democrats' chances for getting someone to defeat Trump in the coming election. What are the polls showing about their candidates? It looks like there's a lot of confusion all over the place, kind of a mix of candidates there. And I don't know. What are you looking at as far as the Democrats' success in producing a very viable candidate? What do the polls say about that? Those odds?
Well, the Democratic race is in transition right now. You know, it was sort of, you know, pretty stable for quite some time with Biden on top and sort of Sanders and Elizabeth Warren after that, and everybody else low down. But now it's changed around a lot, and Sanders has moved up, Biden has moved way down, except in some southern states. Bloomberg has moved way up. Warren seems to be fading, and Klobuchar has moved up some. So we really have to wait a while. The Democratic race is still very much in flux, and it's going to shift around a lot over the next few weeks. But suffice it to say, most of the polls show that even though President Trump's job rating, his positive job rating, is about 45-46%, they also show that his negative job rating, you know, the disapproval side, is about 51-52%. So he still has a majority of voters who are not happy with him. And that's why in a lot of trial heat polls, it shows that the Democratic candidates are leading President Trump. And most of the new polls are showing that Bloomberg does better against Trump than any of the Democrats right now.
During the impeachment hearings, which seemed awfully, awfully long, how did you see the polls fluctuating? Did it play to his benefit where he maybe got sympathy, or was it down? And then as soon as the announcement was made that he was acquitted, it went up. How did the poll react to during that time?
Well, the polls did just the opposite of what you might think they would do. During the impeachment controversy, when people were attacking him and the Democrats were making the case against him, his poll numbers went up, and since the impeachment controversy is over with, his poll numbers have remained up. So that whole matter did not seem to hurt him at all. In fact, for a while, it did seem to help him. And that Gallup poll we were talking about earlier was taken during that time.
What are some of the other indicators as far as the importance of issues to the American voters? Certainly, I guess you've got to say economy is always going to be number one. But behind that, where do they rank?
Well, the economy, you know, across the board is, as you said, usually the top issue. But interestingly, there's a big split between Republicans and Democrats. The Democrats think by a pretty solid margin that health care is the top issue. And Republicans think immigration, in addition to the economy, is a top issue. So there are differences by partisanship as well.
There was a lot of talk about the Iowa caucus and the New Hampshire being the first two that they were critical to the success of the Democrats for getting a jump and getting some momentum going. Why is that? It represents actually a pretty small number of the delegate votes that they need, but yet there's a lot of importance placed on it and saying that this is critical, that they have a good showing to start with.
Well, the reason why it's critical is because, you know, we've been talking about this Democratic nomination race for a year and a half now, and this is the first time any human beings have had an opportunity to actually vote on it. And so what happens when people actually vote on it, sometimes the kaleidoscope shifts and the race starts looking differently. There's no question about it. The effect of Iowa and New Hampshire has had a very negative impact on Joe Biden's campaign, for example. He fell from being the front runner to being down in the pack. And the muddle, the scramble, seems to be helping Michael Bloomberg's candidacy. Of course, you know, on the one hand, Bernie Sanders is now running first in national polls. But the big question is, you know, can Bernie Sanders ultimately win the nomination? I think most analysts think that he can't. So Iowa and New Hampshire really scrambled the decks there. And it's because they were first. It was the first time people had an opportunity to vote on candidates. All the candidates went in those states. campaigned hard, spent a lot of time and money, and the people who won, won, and the people who lost, lost.
Ron, if you stay with me, I got some comments in from some of our listeners. They're asking questions about below-radar polling, how are the polls conducted, how much faith should we have in them, and also about that Iowa debacle that took place with the caucus. So we'll talk with Ron Fauché. He's a political analyst and a publisher of Lunchtime Politics. We're asking you this poll question. If you go to our WWL.com website and look under the Blue Runner Opinion Poll, we're asking you this question. According to a recent Gallup poll, 6 out of 10 Americans say they're better off than they were 3 years ago. Are you better off? Right now, it's 75% says they are, 25% says no. Cast your vote at WWL.com, and we'll be back right after this. And looking at our WWL Blue Runner Opinion Poll, according to a recent Gallup poll, 6 out of 10 Americans say they're better off today than they were 3 years ago. Are you better off? It's 71% saying yes, 29% saying no. That, of course, is an unscientific poll. I run polls, outdoor opinion polls on my website asking hunting and fishing issues and preferences, but it's far from scientific, so you really can't put a lot of faith in them, but they are very interesting. However, Ron Fauché is a political analyst and a publisher of Lunchtime Politics and a professional pollster, so there's no one better person to explain how polls are conducted, because I'm getting a lot of text about that, than Ron Fauché. Ron, is there a scientific polling paradigm or handbook, if you will, on how they should be done, or do pollsters use their own formulas?
Well, there is. There are standards on how to do polls properly, and most major pollsters and reputable pollsters follow those standards. Not everybody does, and so you have to be careful about it, but most pollsters do. And if you look at polls in most elections, you do find that they are generally pretty accurate. The thing you have to keep in mind about a poll is that they only measure public opinion at the moment they're taken. So that if a poll that's taken Thursday before a Tuesday election shows one thing, that doesn't mean that there aren't shifts in public opinion on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday that could change the results. So you have to always keep that in mind, too, because polls are not meant to be crystal balls. They're not meant to predict outcomes. They only tell you where things are at the time the poll was taken.
Here's an interesting question. Someone said they would like to know who they are polling, what ethnic group of people. So how does a cross-section get chosen for polling? Because certainly it could be skewed depending on, you know, the audience of WWL who's voting on ours. It certainly is going to skew a certain way. People who listen to my program and vote on my poll, they're going to be skewed a certain way. How do you ensure that it's a true cross-section of the public?
Well, you have to have targets for your sample. For example, if 53% of the electorate is made up of women, you have to make sure 53% of your poll sample is made up of women. If 52% of your electorate are made up of African Americans, you have to make sure 52% of the poll sample, and going through every possible variable and demographic, and that's the way the best polls are done. And usually, what happens is you do this based on a random selection, and if for some reason one variable is coming in too high, You either weight the sample or you change the sample targets.
In media, radio and television, they have what they call ratings distortion. Is there such a parallel in polls where maybe people are purposely answering a certain way, trying to get a particular outcome, when maybe that's not really the true way they feel, or that maybe there's some fear for answering it honestly? Is there distortion in polls that you have to factor in?
And sometimes they can be. And some people claim that there's a distortion in polls that involve President Trump, because some people don't want to admit they support him when in fact they do. When David Duke was running for governor of Louisiana, he generally underpolled because people wouldn't tell pollsters that they were for him, but would vote for him. But generally speaking, that isn't the case.
And if you would take us back to the polling when Trump was a candidate, how did that go? Was it very low? Did it show any trend to move upward, or was it stagnant? How did it show, and how accurate was it in predicting that he would become president?
Well, first of all, the polling in the primaries was accurate. As you recall, every day President Trump was quoting poll numbers about how well he was doing. In the general election, the polling actually turned out to be pretty accurate, too. You have to keep in mind that the national polls were measuring the popular vote. They were not measuring the electoral vote. The electoral vote has to be measured state by state. And in the final average of all the national polls, excuse me, just a moment, Hillary Clinton had a, excuse me, had a,
So what we're going to do, Ron, we're going to take a break. I know exactly what you're going through because it happens to me. Give you a second to clear your throat. We'll be right back and continue our conversation. Ron Fauché is with us. You got a question or a comment, and I got a few of them. We'll pass them along to him and get some answers from the pollster and also the political analyst. We're back right after this. And we're joined by a political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics, Ron Fauché. We're talking about polls, the makeup of polls, and some of the results we're getting on Donald Trump's latest polling. Ron, I got a question in here. Someone wanted me to ask you to analyze and calculate voter suppression and Russian interference in the presidential election. Do you have a formula?
No, and I don't think anybody really does have a formula because you really don't know what happened. It's one event, one series of pieces of activity in the middle of millions of other things going on. I think that most people and most analysts would guess that that it did not affect the outcome of the election. But you know, when you have states like Wisconsin and Michigan that were very close, anybody can argue that almost anything affected the outcome of those elections.
I've got another question from a listener. Can the polls be hacked? Poll hacking. I don't know if I've ever had anybody bring that up. Can someone hack a poll?
Well, I suppose technically it could happen. Usually it would be difficult for something like that to happen because anybody who wanted to hack a poll wouldn't know when the poll was being hacked and who was calling. But I'm sure somebody could figure it out and they could hack a poll like you hack almost anything else. I have never heard it done, but I suppose it could be done. But pollsters are always very careful, should be very careful, to look at the results and make sure they seem right. And if something doesn't seem right, you throw those interviews out and you test it again.
I've got a texter that needs a clarification on something. I didn't take the comment this way, but evidently he did. He wanted to know if you compared voting for Donald Trump to voting for David Duke. I didn't take it as voting. I took it as polling was similar.
Right, exactly. And there are other candidates, too. For example, when Jim Garrison was running for office in New Orleans, there was the same effect. But the point I'm making is that there are certain candidates – and they could be Democrats or Republicans or white or black or men or women, whatever it may be, who, because of a certain social stigma that some people think exists in voting for those candidates, they don't want to admit it, but then they go vote for the candidate. And that was the case with David Duke, and most pollsters, understood that and tried to deal with it. In the case of Donald Trump, I have never really found that to be the case, although a lot of people who support President Trump claim it's the case. And they say that's why he's not polling better than he is, because a lot of people who support him don't say they're for him, even though in the last presidential election, the polls generally were right, as we were talking about. They showed Hillary Clinton with a 3-point lead nationally, and she won the popular vote with a 2-point lead. Most of the state polls were right. A few of them were wrong, and a few of the state polls stopped polling a week or two before the election. And other studies show that Donald Trump moved up a lot in the last few days of the election. So those polls missed what happened with Trump, but it's not that they were wrong, because they were taken before the shift to Trump took place in some of these key states.
Is there any way to compensate for that below-radar polling? In your plus and minus factor for room for error. How is the margin of error determined? Sometimes it's very narrow, and sometimes it can be a little bit wider.
Well, it's based on the sample size. Generally, in a national survey of about 1,000 sample, the margin of error is plus or minus 3%. If you go down to maybe a 600 sample, that margin of error will go up to about, say, 4%. So it really depends what it is. And most of the polls that are done have a big enough sample size where it shouldn't be a problem. However, a lot of the polls that are done in these presidential nomination races have very small samples. I've seen samples as low as 300 in this current Democratic nomination race, 300 nationally, which is a very low sample and with a very high margin of error. So you're going to have that. The smaller the sample, the higher the margin of error. Now, the margin of error doesn't mean the poll is bad or the numbers are wrong. It just means that based on probability, it can be further off than it would be if the sample was greater.
Understood. Ron, can you explain what the situation was with the Iowa caucus, the reason for the delayed results, some things that had to be corrected, and now we're hearing some of the candidates say that it's very detrimental to their campaigns because the accurate numbers didn't come out. What went on there? We've had, I think, the person that heads up their elections has lost a job. What was that all about? And do you think it may change the way that they conduct elections there now and maybe get away from that caucus procedure?
Well, I think it was incompetence. I think the Iowa Democratic Party did not do a good job putting that together. They didn't do a good job supervising what was going on. They had software and technical tech issues that were came in bit them on election night that were pretty bad. And then they were not transparent about it. They didn't stand up, on election night early and say, we have some problems here. We're going to delay getting these numbers to you until tomorrow so we can fix the problems. So they handled it about as poorly as they could. And as a result of that, I think people are going to rethink having caucuses anywhere anymore, because they've become so important to these presidential elections. And candidates are spending so much money and effort trying to mobilize people to vote in these caucuses that if there's any question about the fairness of the count, it creates a big problem, as there was in Iowa. And I also think Iowa probably lost its right to hold the first caucus in the country because of that.
Wow. Ron, thanks for spending some time with us. We appreciate it, as always. And enjoy your weekend, and look forward to our next visit.
Thank you.
All right, Ron Fauché. He is a political analyst, publisher of, check it out, Lunchtime Politics. All right, we come back after this. I'm going to catch up on some of the text messages that go way back. We'll discuss those, and if you'd like to comment on those, we welcome your comments either by phone at 504-260-1870 or text them 870-870. And also cast your vote on our opinion poll. The Blue Runner poll is asking, according to that Gallup poll, 6 out of 10 Americans say they're better off than they were 3 years ago. Are you better off? We'll have the results coming back after this.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.